Did you ever wonder about your death day, Roger? Let's say your death day was, I don't know, April 23rd, and somehow you knew that. You could have a death day party.
You have passed weird, Bigelow. You're approaching degenerate.
You can get totally ripped, man. Pig out, invite all your friends. Get yourself a beautiful lady, right? Right in the heat of passion. Just
sorry,
as you're...
Sorry, did I interrupt last night's conquest?
Hardly.
Hi, Roger.
Hello, Rebecca. So how have you been?
I have a home phone, Roger. Using the mutilated remains of street scum as an excuse to ask after my health is not exactly what I would call thoughtful.
And you call me degenerate.
Dr. McCann, please use the technical.
So what's the story on these John Does? What's so unbelievable?
I'll show you.
Hey, nice shot, Roger.
Thanks. Is there enough here to identify?
I wondered that myself. The teeth and fingerprints are practically worthless, but I noticed one thing.
What?
Stitches. You can see where the cut was made, traversing the sternum and incised with an electric saw.
They had surgery?
Nope. They had autopsies. They've been here before, fellas.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and with me today, as always, is Sam Stepanenko.
So dead tired that I'm alive again.
And caught in the morgue is Trish Coughlin. She won't be joining us this week. We just didn't have the resurrection stuff ready.
No.
So just the two of us today, we're going to be talking about Dead Heat from 1988. This has got to be the best action, buddy cop, comedy, zombie, horror movie I have ever seen.
I would have to agree with you.
Yes.
Because I've never seen any other ones.
Well, there is that. There is that. Dead Heat is a unique little beast. And it certainly doesn't let plot get in the way of a good story.
No, you know what? I just hacked on it a little bit, but I actually had a lot of fun watching this.
It is fun to watch. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
It makes zero sense. And for a comedy, it has got to be one of the unhappiest comedies I've ever seen because everybody dies.
It's true, yeah.
Like, everybody.
Yeah. It's not a happy ending, but you don't seem to be too bothered by it.
No.
I remember seeing this way back when, and the comedy never really landed with me. But, you know, Joe Piscopo, he's coming from SNL as a hot commodity in 1988.
And Treat Williams, who was supposed to be one of the next big sort of
leading
men, and nobody else.
Yeah, there's a couple like decent character actors in here.
This is a movie that is literally full of guys you saw on that thing that one time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you recognize everybody in it.
That's about it.
But yeah. That's about it. You recognize them.
Yeah. This is a fairly big budget television movie, I think. Honestly, I feel like this should have been made a few years earlier on a much smaller budget. So it would have been kind of grindhousey and been in the drive-ins and dive theaters. Like, it's the concept that's what this feels like. This movie looks almost too good for its concept.
Yeah, even the makeup effects. I was pleasantly surprised by how good they actually were.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this was at a time when buddy cop movies were huge. So, hey, let's do that. Then they have a lot of comedy in those movies. So let's do that. Oh, horror is really big still. Let's do that. Especially zombies. Let's do that.
And I can't disagree with the formula. Like I said, there's a lot to like here. It's just really non-linear in the weirdest way.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's a linear story, but it's really choppy.
Choppy is a very good description for it. It's very choppy. The scenes kind of jump around. You could tell Joe Piscopo's script was, all right, do this scene, say something funny, then we move on. Well, what do you mean? There's nothing here. It says line to come. Yeah, from you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Say something pithy.
Yeah. Say something Piscopo-y.
Yeah, which doesn't really work if you're not directing your actor.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie's hard enough to follow. He's going through the script of like, well, what's supposed to happen here? And it's kind of why the humor doesn't seem to fit in any spot. It's because they're not sure what the humor's supposed to be.
Well, yeah, there's that. And the fact that Joe Piscopo was never, in my mind, a particularly good actor. He's very funny.
He's very funny. Like, you think back to that time, him and Eddie Murphy were probably the best at doing, like, imitations.
Yeah. Impressions and stuff like that.
Impressions.
Yeah. But, he was very good at sketch comedy. And that's what this felt like whenever he was on screen, was a sketch scene.
Yeah. Ad lib as much as possible because you're live on Saturday night.
Yeah, exactly. That being said, I enjoyed him, and I've never particularly enjoyed Joe Piscopo in film. I loved him on Saturday Night Live. I think he's a very funny man, but yeah, I just never really liked him on film, except for Johnny Dangerously. He's pretty good in that.
Yeah, Johnny Dangerously. I love that movie. Yeah. But man, did he pump up by this point in his life? That was the switch from SNL, and then when he got out there. Man, I can see why they went for him, because he's a good-looking guy. He looks like an action star because he's a big, beefy boy.
Yeah, that is when he really got into being like a big buff. I don't want to say meathead because he wasn't.
No.
But he was getting close to that size.
That's Carrot Top.
That's Carrot Top, yes.
He got meathead-y.
He got meathead-y, very, very much so. Now I'm thinking of my cast. No, I'm kidding. I wouldn't cast Carrot Top in anything. But
I mean, he was a funny-looking dude before, and then add like 100 pounds of muscle.
He looked very strange.
He's a very strange looking dude. And the spray on tan's on top of it all.
Yeah.
He should have gone into wrestling.
Oh yeah, he would have been a great.
What a gimmick.
Yeah, great gimmick. This is who I really am. This is my gimmick.
I'm going to hit you over the head with a watermelon.
Yeah. Or a rubber mallet. A great big one.
Yeah, right. Just comes out with a chest.
Wee rat noise.
Rubber chickens and yeah. So the general gist of this movie is it's about a couple of cops who stumble upon this strange mystery of a bank robbery where the perps were already dead. They had committed this robbery after having an autopsy at the morgue once before.
Love
thus,
that.
Yeah, thus the mystery of this show begins.
Yes. Like great setup. And even the premise is great.
Mm-hmm. That opening was actually really strong. Yeah. Like I thought the big guys who were robbing the bank and getting shot but not going down, like, man, that all looked pretty damn good.
It looked really quite good, yeah. Yeah, and Treat Williams, and I'm going to say this now, is it is a shame that he didn't do or have a bigger career. I mean, he has a huge career, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But he, like, his charisma in this very awkwardly done film,
mm-hmm.
he's still a presence in it, all the way through it.
Yeah, this is the guy that, like, would go on to do one of my favorite horror movies, Deep Rising. Yeah. And he's got this really likable quality that I think he was too early. Like, this is the guy who would have been great Star-Lord or something.
He would have been. And he did go to say that he didn't focus on his career enough. He was too busy partying. Like, he actually said it. He said he shot himself in the foot because instead of focusing on his career and doing the work, he was too busy drinking and doing drugs and being in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in, think about Hollywood in the 80s. I mean, that was the decade of excess for everybody, particularly Hollywood. It did ruin a lot of careers.
Yeah, he still managed to stay busy throughout his life. Yeah. He passed just this past year.
Yeah, motorcycle accident.
Yeah, it was actually earlier this year, wasn't it?
It was this year, yeah.
Yeah, it was this year.
This just in the last couple months.
Oh, man.
Yeah, no, that one caught me by surprise because, I mean, I remember seeing him stuff recently and he's like, well, he's a young-looking 71.
Yeah, he aged pretty good considering all the partying.
Yes,
Yeah, it's too bad the motorcycle accident took him a little too early. Probably had a few good years left in him.
Yes, he did. I think so.
Yeah.
Or should have.
He would have been really good in some of those, like, senior roles, the grandpa roles. And
oh, yeah. And that's what he was doing, is a lot of these older dads, mm-hmm. senior grandfather roles and stuff like that. And, yeah, really good. Even in his more recent work, still has great presence. Like, there's like a screen presence to this man that ultimately got wasted, I think. Even in terrible movies, he was good. The Pursuit of D.B. Cooper, not a good movie, but boy, was he good in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his career was great. It really was. All right, well, let's run the trailer for Dead Heat 1988 and see if you can make some sense of this. I watched it. I still don't know.
There's definitely something very weird going on here.
Detective Roger Mortis has a problem. He's dead. But Detective Bigelow is bringing him back alive.
We have something on the monitor, Captain.
That's okay. Don't get up. Told you not to get up.
Now, he's got 12 hours to solve the toughest murder case of his career. His own.
What is this thing? Very ugly. Get down!
Remember the good old days when guns killed people?
That's it. From now on, I'm a vegetarian.
How do you fight this thing?
Maybe we could drown it in A1 sauce.
Treat Williams.
Sit down.
And Joe Piscopo are Dead Heat.
You shoot them, they don't die. Oh, yeah!
You can't keep a good cop dead.
That was a trailer for Dead Heat from 1988, directed by Mark Goldblatt, and he would go on to direct The Punisher 1989, the Dolph Lundgren one, but he was primarily known as an editor. He actually was recently just entered into the Hall of Fame for editors. He's that good.
Yes, he's edited a lot of stuff we've covered, actually.
Yes.
I didn't list any of it, but...
Well, his first film was Piranha. For Roger Corman. So that's where he cut his teeth. Editors often went on to go be directors, but he would meet James Cameron over there and go on to edit The Terminator and a lot of other Cameron projects. He became the guy. And when you're editing for James Cameron, you're working on some of the biggest films of all time.
And you better be really effing good at what you do then.
Yeah. He is.
He is.
Didn't do a lot of directing, though.
No. Well, and the funny thing is he's an editor, and this movie was not well edited. There's an irony to it.
Yeah. Yeah, but that could be the script by Terry Black, who's primarily a television writer. Too bad Trish isn't here, because he wrote 5 episodes of Tales from the Crypt and 3 episodes of Tales from the Crypt Keeper. I sense a theme.
There's definitely a theme there.
He definitely liked the horror comedy.
And that explains why this feels so kind of choppy, because it has sort of almost like those commercial breaks in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you bet they were probably thinking television when they were doing this as well. It's like, okay, we'll get a theatrical, but everything goes to TV.
So, yeah.
Like, let's make those natural break points too.
Yeah, and they did. That's exactly what it felt like. I think about it, each scene was about the right length between commercial breaks.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if they cut out all the banter, this movie would only be about 40 minutes.
Probably.
But there'd be so much more room for plot.
So much more room for plot.
But and why do that?
Yeah, and you can do banter while action's happening. We've seen it lots of times.
All right, this stars Treat Williams as Roger Mortis. Boy, isn't that a giveaway.
It made me mad, not gonna lie. Yeah,
that's some cheap comic book writing there, man. Yeah. Like,
I mean, it made me mad at first, and I'm like, okay, I see what you're doing there. I'll give it to you.
Can we call him Morty or something, yeah. Maybe? Like, now we know he's dead. But
well, they don't wait long to kill him anyhow. But
no, they certainly don't. Joe Piscopo is Doug Bigelow, and You know him from Wise Guys, Johnny Dangerously, and we may have talked about him in... I forgot to write down the number, but I know the movie.
Me too, King Kong, and I forgot to write down the numbers too.
I wrote down episode, and then I didn't write down the number. Go figure. Lindsay Frost is Randy James. She's not that Randy, though.
No.
No. We may have mentioned her in episode 57.
The Ring.
Yes, but I doubt it.
But I doubt it.
Darren McGavin was Dr. Ernest McNabb, who was in A Christmas Story, Billy Madison, and Raw Deal.
Yes.
And would just pop up unexpectedly in scenes over and over and over again in this movie for reasons.
It made no sense.
No.
I understand, by the time we got to the end, I understood what they were doing, but yeah. It's like... That made no sense.
Yeah, he just keeps popping in out of nowhere.
Well, and
in scenes where it doesn't make sense for him to be there.
I know, and it actually works really well for the comedy because it's like a complete non sequitur. It's like, why is this guy here?
Yeah, and I wish they would have acknowledged that a bit more.
Yeah,
just to pick on his morgue employee.
Yes,
and just make her life a living hell. Vincent Price is in this movie as Arthur P. Loudermilk. He is a rich dude.
A very rich dude.
Very rich dude. We primarily see him on a television monitor because he's dead by when we're introduced to him. Or is he? That is the mystery. We have talked about Vincent Price many times, including our very first episode.
Last Man on Earth.
That's right. Then we would move on to episode 60.
Abbott and Costello. Meet Frankenstein.
That's right.
I didn't miss it this time.
Yeah, you were there for that one. Nope. So, episode 101.
Is that The Fly?
That was The Fly. And episode 134.
House on Haunted Hill.
And I feel like there's more.
I did too, but I'm going through like, no, that's it.
That's it. I really feel like there's more, but there isn't. That's still plenty. This is number 5.
This is number 5.
Yeah. So, pretty good for Vincent Price. For the short time he's in this movie.
But such a great short time.
It is.
As always.
Yeah, it's Vincent Price after all. Claire Kirkconnell was Rebecca Smithers, and she was the morgue technician.
And love interest for Roger.
Yeah.
And kind of.
We're not sure. I feel like there was a date or something, and then he didn't call.
Well, and that was established that they had dated or had gone on a date, and then he never called her back.
Yeah.
But it never really went anywhere until the end. When he's like, well, I was kind of thinking of you as the person I spend the rest of my life with, blah, 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 blah. It's like, no, you weren't. You never gave us that sense whatsoever.
Well, you might be thinking it now because the rest of his life is maybe an hour.
Yeah, well, and he did spend a large part of the rest of his life with her, actually. She just happened to be a corpse in the back of a morgue van, but...
Yeah, that's frustrating because a lot of characters are killed off screen.
Yeah.
They just turn up dead. Key Luke is Mr. Thule, and he was in Gremlins and Enter the Dragon.
And it's like 300 other things.
Yeah, he's that Asian dude you saw in that thing that
his
one time.
Was back to 1940s.
Yeah, he's been around a long, long time. Mm. And he was actually came into this movie, well, he came into the industry as a consultant for any type of Asian themes that would be in movies as an expert. And then they just... hey, why don't you do this?
Yeah.
And thus his acting career began.
I mean, casting an Asian as an Asian?
Shocking.
How radical.
Yeah, well, that didn't happen a lot in the 40s.
I know. Or the 50s or the 60s.
Yeah. Shame on them. Robert Picardo is Lieutenant Herzog. We don't see much of Robert Picardo, but boy, he would go on to have a great career. We best know him as the Hollow Doctor on Star Trek Voyager. We also may have talked about him in episode 84.
Oh, yeah. Total Recall. He was great in that.
Yeah. And well, you
kind
might,
of, I guess.
You might remember from The Howling as well. I had the pleasure of spending an entire weekend with him at Star Trek convention in Vulcan where I was doing press stuff. And we drank and told stories. And what a fun dude.
He seems like it.
Yeah. My friend Richard did all the Star Trek stuff, so I would be like, hey, so tell me about The Howling and other stuff. So, yeah, he's a great dude. Mel Stewart was Captain Mayberry, and he was in Bride of the Reanimator. Professor Toro Tanaka, wrestler. He would go into acting once he retired and couldn't take the bumps anymore, but we saw him in episode 96, The Running Man, and episode 178, Last Action Hero.
Oh, I think he liked working with Arnold.
He did. Stephen R. Bannister was the Thing. That was pretty much it. That's all he did. Was this makeup monster thing that also popped out and made no sense. I think he was just hiding under a blanket until somebody discovered him. Great makeup, two faces. Lou Hobson was Whitfield. He was in The Hidden, Red Heat, and Lionheart. Just wanted to say Lionheart because we did Van Damme last week.
Yes, we did.
And Tom Nolan was Jonas, and I had to bring him up because we talked about in episode 392 very recently, Voyage of the Rock Aliens.
Voyage of the Rock Aliens. I didn't go that deep this week. Sorry.
I wasn't going to, and then I saw Tom Nolan, and I mean, you look in IMDb, he's in this Voyage of the Rock Aliens outfit, and I'm like, wow, when is this ever going to happen again?
I mean, we have Craig Schaffer. We might cross over with that again.
That's true. I mean, I always said that about Hard Rock Zombies, and we've hit that a few times.
Yes, now. We have.
Yeah. So that's it for the cast for Dead Heat. If you want to go deeper, go ahead. It's on your own. On your own time. Yeah, so we've got Roger Mortis. There's a shootout at this lab where they're investigating the resurrection of these criminals. They found a lead, I guess, that takes them to this place. They're asking questions. Then the monster attacks and blah, blah, blah. And poor Roger gets
suffocated to death.
Suffocated in a decompression chamber. Mm. Which is where they euthanize the test animal.
Which is awful. Probably the most horrific thing in the movie.
Yeah, right? I'm like, them just telling me that is awful. Yeah. Like, you just couldn't give him a needle?
Yeah.
Like, this whole room where you suffocate animals? Oh my God.
It is really horrific. I think that's one thing that we could change.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
So, Roger dies in this, but when Becky shows up, they have figured out this equipment and bring him back to life.
Looks like he's in remarkably good condition.
He's dead, Becky.
It doesn't matter, Doug. Someone has found a way to revitalize dead tissue, the way a starfish grows new limbs. After all, what really separates life from death?
But the soul, Becky, what about the soul?
Looks like they may have found a way around that too, Doug.
And what if he wakes up like some mindless idiot?
Then I hope you'll shoot him in the head.
Thanks a lot.
Kinda. Just bring him back.
Bring him back, yeah.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of life part of that.
No. Yeah. Heart's not beating.
But he feels great.
Come to think of it, I feel terrific. I feel incredible. Ooh, it's great to be alive.
But he feels great. He feels better than he's ever felt in his life.
Well, I mean, it's the best he's felt in his death.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wah, wah, wah.
Hey, the jokes are better for me than they were in the movie.
I'll give you that.
And the company liaison, tour guide, press agent, this is Randy James, played by Lindsay Frost. And she's kind of joined at the hip with these guys for a little while because the only lead, and they have attempted to kill her.
Yeah, and they know that there's something off about her, but they don't know what.
Yeah, because she's not sharing all the information.
No, and we find out why later.
Yes, because she is the daughter of Arthur P. Loudermilk.
No, she's not.
Yeah, she is.
She was in the hospital with him. She was dying at the same time he was dying.
I thought they were related.
No.
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 Yes.
No.
No?
No. No. She was in the hospital with Loudermilk, and he made her a deal. And when she died, she was resurrected. Mm-hmm. And they had a technique to keep her from decomposing like the rest of them.
Ah.
Which is why she did the thing she did.
Well, this brings me to my big remake idea, which is three words. Subscription-based immortality. Because fucking everything needs a subscription now.
I like it.
Yeah, I knew you'd get it like right away.
Yeah, no, I like it, and that could be that, and that could be the pitch that he's doing at the, in that final scene. There is for a low monthly fee of $19.95
or whatever, under $9.95.
Yeah, yeah, $1.2 million a month.
Yeah, imagine immortality comes at a price.
Yeah, it definitely wouldn't be $19.95.
No, it would be geared specifically to the rich,
to the sick wealthy.
Yeah.
The filthy, icky, wealthy.
Once that kind of popped in my brain and moved into the corporate greed thing, and I know we go corporate a lot, but I love the idea of subscription-based because Adobe, subscription-based. You know, I was looking at some script writing software, subscription-based. Why do I have to keep paying for everything?
Well, I mean, you get a Ring camera, you have to get a subscription.
Yeah.
Right. It's like everything requires a subscription.
Yeah, because they want you to keep paying.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't buy anything outright anymore.
Could we have cured cancer a couple decades ago? Maybe, but then you don't have people coming back for treatments.
Well, yeah, and you don't have your fundraisers and your charity drives and your advertising.
Much.
It's money. Lucrative AF.
Yeah. So you can cure death temporarily as long as you keep taking these pills or injections or whatever.
Or coming back for a buzz or whatever it is. Yeah, treatment or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever because their machine was really big.
It was really big. Yeah. But because they established that they have a way to extend that period of time before you start to deteriorate. And that's the thing we haven't mentioned yet is Roger does come back, but...
Roger, you haven't heard the worst of it.
I'm dead, Rebecca. How much worse can it get?
The morgue doctor tells him, well, I figure you've only got about 12 hours before you start to break down and you're dead.
Although I don't know why anybody didn't think about injecting him with formaldehyde to preserve him a little bit longer.
So many holes in this plot, Jay. Don't find any more, okay?
Yeah. Maybe in my remake, I don't know. But yeah, I like the idea of subscription-based.
I like that device. I like that device. And I mean, you could start picking up on clues on it earlier on that there's something going on with this resurrection.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily who's behind it, but as they talk to people, they can find out, yeah, well, this guy's selling eternal life.
Yeah, I mean, you could think about how much that would affect the uber elites, say a president was assassinated and they didn't want the world to know about it. Boom. He shows up on TV the next day wearing a hat.
Yeah.
Cover up the hole.
Hold his brains in.
Yeah. But there he is. President-y,
yes.
Yes.
I think one of the reasons they did the decompression or suffocated Roger is because when you're resurrected, you look the way you did when you died, right? So those robbers that have been shot to death, they were kind of decomposing already and looked very monstrous. But, I mean, they looked like they'd been shot.
Yeah.
Right? So, at least with Roger...
You still take damage.
Yes. With Roger, you had the opportunity to look normal for a little while until he starts taking bullets and getting his finger cut off. And
yeah, well, when I had to laugh when he threw his hand through some glass and cut it. And he goes, ow.
Yeah.
Later on, he's getting shot. No big. So, like, well, you do feel pain, or was that just a ow because
a response,
ow. Response of you knew you did something,
yeah,
but then you're like, oh, it isn't an ow.
Okay, well, I do that. I don't have a lot of feeling in my left hand. I'll hurt it, like I'll damage it, and I'll say ow even though it doesn't actually hurt because that's a response. It's like I know I did something bad.
See, that would have been interesting if they played on that a little bit. Can you feel that? No, I can't.
Yeah, because it is. It's kind of a reaction. It's like when you know you've cut yourself, you're just like, ow, that's going to hurt, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when it doesn't, and that would have been the moment there. So you're going to go, ow. He's like, wait a minute. That didn't hurt.
No, ow.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been because he's lost that nerve sensitivity because he got shot prior to that and didn't feel anything. He's like, oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Now, if a lot of this feels familiar, this was meant to be an homage to DOA. And we may do that soon because DOA is about a guy who's poisoned and discovering who killed him before the poison takes him out entirely. That was essentially this premise, except he's dead and he's still on the clock.
Yeah. He's looking to find out who killed him.
Yeah.
I don't know who killed me.
Yeah. So that is kind of interesting in and of itself that this was a remake of a more dramatic noir piece.
Well, at least inspired by it, yeah.
Yeah.
And I did like that premise, but again, it kind of gets lost in all of the comedy and the special effects, and it gets muddied in there, and you forget that that's what he's trying to do. He's mm-hmm. trying to solve the crime and figure out who killed him, right? The two main goals. And the detective work gets lost in all of the other stuff, which we'll fix. Well, we won't fix it, but we'll try to provide some guidance on how to fix it.
Well, now that we got a broad idea. I mean, my first thought is, are we even making them cops anymore?
I don't know. I mean, they probably should be, because that whole investigation aspect of it is they end up where they are because they are investigating a crime, mm-hmm. right? A very unique and unusual crime, but they're investigating a crime, right? So I think they need to be.
Yeah. And I think Randy needs to be actively, like, she's the witness, but she actively needs to be dissuading them away from. She's also trying to preserve her life.
Yes.
Because she's also benefiting from this resurrection.
And she doesn't treatment. She doesn't want to lose it because she knows what will happen to her if she does.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's an important element of the thing. And it's not apparent until it's too late anyhow.
It does look like they're trying to kill her initially to keep her quiet, but that clearly wouldn't have worked.
Because she's dead already.
Yeah, which if they had clipped her or whatever, then Jig would have been up right away. So yeah, again, nonsensical story.
Yeah, it was never established that it was like a misdirect or anything like that, which is what it could have been, mm-hmm. right? Because they knew they couldn't kill her. They also should have known they couldn't kill Roger, though, because, well, they'd already killed him once.
So I don't know. Maybe they were trying to do active dismemberment or something with submachine guns or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
Strategic dismemberment.
Yeah, but yeah, taking a zombie to kill a zombie, which I kind of liked, is this zombie-on-zombie combat was kind of an interesting idea. Mm-hmm. It's like, how does that work out? In the end, it didn't make sense what they ended up doing to defeat those zombies in the house, right? Because mm-hmm. they died, but...
Yeah, they were electrocuting them, they were...
But it didn't make sense.
No, their deaths don't make any sense at all.
No, if they'd exploded them.
Yeah, explode them.
Immobilize them somehow.
Some Romero rules.
Yeah.
Like, give me something.
Yeah, something to, yeah, because, I mean, terminating the brainstem, mm-hmm. and, you know, it'll move around nerve-wise, but it's not going to have motivation. I mean, I think we can just bring that in as a device, is like them figuring out that, well,
they have to figure out something, but I mean, if we do Romero rules, then we can't have the Chinese butcher scene anymore with all of the hacked up animals coming to life why he's got one in the butcher shop, I have no idea. Just for this emergency to cause chaos and distraction.
Yeah, it made no sense. As funny as it was to me, it really bothered Trish, though. She did send a message saying, this really bothered me.
Yeah, we got some of her casting and stuff, too.
Yeah, and some show notes from her. But yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because yeah, she did mention specifically that scene made her, like, really upset her and bothered her for some reason. It looked cheesy as fuck. It was great.
It was great. It looked way better than it should be.
Yeah.
It was a very cheesy scene, but it looked fabulous.
Surprisingly good. Like I said, given what we were watching, like, all the makeup effects were actually pretty good. I think I already said that. But that scene, we could pretty much do without that. And service the plot instead.
Yeah, I'd say Thule, for me, is probably the progenitor. The guy who originally had the idea and went to Loudermilk for the financing to get the ball rolling
on
this idea. So they're partners in this resurrection scam.
Yes. Spoiler, by the way.
Yeah, initially we think Loudermilk has died and he's left some hints.
No, we
along
don't.
The way. It's Vincent Price. We're not just going to see him on a television.
No.
Although I was questioning it.
Yeah, no,
I was like, oh, is that all we get? I mean, he is old.
Yeah, no, I knew that he was somehow the bad guy. Whether he was alive or not, I didn't know, but he was definitely, I had a feeling that he was somehow the bad guy trying to extend his life. Just the way it worked out, I think that it actually worked really well for me when he was making his presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yeah, this is perfect. This is like classic Vincent Price.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the only villain that I didn't see coming was McNabb. And that's because they didn't give you any clues that he was a villain.
No, he's this guy just keeps showing up and awkwardly in scenes.
Yeah, which I, again, the more I think about it, the more I love that. If you're keeping the comedy in it, I love that idea. You just have to acknowledge that it's weird.
Yeah.
In the film, they have to acknowledge that it's weird.
But I mean, it does make sense if bodies are disappearing from the morgue and then robbing banks.
Exactly. That should be your first clue. But they do such a good job of not telling you anything that it doesn't really sink in until it's like, oh, yeah, I guess that does make sense.
Yeah. Test subjects. And maybe they're like, okay, we can preserve you guys, but this is how much we need.
Yeah.
And they have to go rob banks to pay for their treatments.
Yeah. Or they're just like, oh, it worked. Cool. All right. Go on, guys. Go do what they know.
Go do what they know. Yeah. Just like, okay, yeah. Yeah, just unleash him into the world.
Yeah. I just love the fact. I'm thinking like of all the things you could do with this, right? Like, so their first test subjects, kind of mindless. So they are literally, this is what I do. I go rob banks. Yeah. I go rob banks, right? So they go rob banks, yeah. Right?
I mean, that should be an establishment of pattern.
Yeah.
You have that opening scene with the bank robbery. Great. And maybe a couple of other crimes happen because their test subjects are dead body, fresh bodies at the morgue.
Yeah.
That are, but they're also
badly damaged.
Yeah. So once a pattern is established, they got to start looking internally right away that, okay, bodies are going missing and now they're robbing banks. What's happening here?
Yeah. What's the connection?
What's the connection?
Yeah.
Because their connection to this company, Body Corps or Body Something.
I didn't catch the name, and yeah. I'm bad with names anyhow.
I think Trish put it in her notes.
Well, no, Body Doc was the clue for how we figured out McNabb.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the numbers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trish sent me a text with the numbers.
Yes. Because she wanted to show that the numbers don't add up to the actual word. There were too many numbers for the word that they found out. I mean, that's attention to detail, Trish.
Yeah. Yeah. That's her obsessive compulsive disorder kicking in.
Yeah, apparently. But yeah, I mean, you could do away with the whole numbers cipher thing. It didn't really make a lot of sense. I think that actual investigative work and tying all those strings together, right? It's like, well, okay, these bodies came from our morgue. Who has access to the morgue?
Yeah. And why would somebody who doesn't want you to find out about anything leave you a hint towards it?
Exactly. I mean, and that's where you drop in some MacGuffin characters like morgue attendants and even other cops, right? I mean, that's where you could bring in like that other detective and give him a little more screen time. And it's like,
yeah, I would love if maybe they're okay, your police chief's in on it. So that's how the doctor's getting the bodies out of the morgue. They're being paid very handsomely.
Yeah, or at least that's what you lead our investigators to believe that's the case.
Yeah.
Right? Even if it's...
Or they're benefiting from this because maybe one of them died and was resurrected and they're like, we will do this for free if you keep providing us with bodies.
Yeah. And again, that's what you could say. Well, we show that you signed into the morgue at midnight on the 25th and that was 12 hours after these bodies showed up. What's going on?
Yeah.
Right.
That would also put our detectives on the back foot a bit because now they can't
trust anybody.
Yeah. And they have to continue this on their own. Rogue cops. Oh no, that never happens in buddy cop movies.
Never, never, ever. Right. So yeah, I think that you can have more investigation and less sort of aimless running around like to cemeteries to check for a body. That scene felt pretty wasted to me.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of wasted because you don't know how they're going from A to B. Yeah. They're going from A to Q a lot of the time.
In a really cool car.
Yeah, and it's about 3/4 in the movie, suddenly you've got Treat Williams investigating on his own. Why? You've got your friend, girlfriend, chick, who also works in the morgue, and your partner. Why'd you leave them behind? Because the next time we see them, they're both dead.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm okay with that. If it makes sense that as to why they're dead.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, and it makes sense as to why Joe Piscopo's dead. And it does make sense as to why the other morgue doctor is dead. Because she keeps poking her nose in his business.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? It makes sense.
Oh, it does make sense. But we don't know much until we get to the other side of that reveal. It's like, oh.
Yeah. And I'm okay with, what's her face, is the other doctor.
Becky.
Her dying off screen. Because that reveal works really well on an emotional level.
Mm-hmm.
But I think doing it twice.
Yeah, with doing Piscopo doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, I think that that the audience should know that he's dead, but Roger doesn't.
Yeah. We should see him. We should literally, if they're splitting up, we should see him doing something and then getting a shootout or whatever and then dying. Like, we should see that off screen. We should see it as an audience, but yeah.
Yeah.
His partner won't know until he turns up.
And I know why they drowned him, because his body had to be perfect.
Yeah. He would be a good specimen.
Yeah.
And they wanted him brain dead.
They wanted, exactly. And you can set that up. I mean, I think that's, you need more explanation, because until we're talking about it, I didn't understand why, like, he was hanging upside down in the fish tank. But now it makes sense, because the condition of the body matters.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to establish that early on, that the more damage the body takes as in its demise, the less effective the treatment is.
Yeah, it's because they can't fix those wounds.
Yeah, because they're definitely not going to heal, because you're not breathing, your heart's not pumping, there's no healing. Sorry, Marvel, healing factor left in the human body at this point. And they've established that the body won't heal.
Yeah, Treat takes a knife to his hand and he winds up wearing a glove to hold it together.
Yeah, and he's walking around with like bullet holes in his torso, and he gets progressively more deteriorated. And I loved that. There were a couple scenes where the makeup looked like Halloween makeup, but...
Yeah. He can't bat 1,000 all the time.
No. The funny thing is, that's the only time, and that should have been the easiest makeup, and that was like the worst makeup in the whole movie. It's like, here, let's put some white face on him and some black around his eyes. He'll look fine. It'll look great on screen.
Money.
Yeah. Go down to the dollar store, get some of that cheap Halloween makeup.
Yeah.
It'll do.
Yeah, I don't know much about the science of decomposition, but I would have said he probably had a few days rather than, what was it?
12 hours.
12 hours. 10 to 12 hours is what they said.
Is what they said, yeah. So, yeah, pretty quick decomp.
Now, the decomposition to Randy's character, that she's been getting these treatments, was very quick. So, whatever's holding her together, like, those treatments need to happen quickly. Otherwise, all of the decomposition that should have happened just kind of rushes back.
Yes, very much so.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, because we just see it. It looks cool, though.
It looks cool. It's a very much a Dorian Gray type of thing.
Yeah.
Like, when it happens, like, now. I think it would have been really cool if we got to see hints of it earlier on,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, she wears a glove or wears gloves or something like that. And you as the audience, again, you get to see that like, her hand in, like, it's kind of withered up kind of shape or something like that, so that it's not as big a surprise as it was, because, again, no clues led to that.
No.
There was lots to suggest that she was hiding something, but not enough to infer that she was already dead. Mm-hmm. Because as far as we know, 12 hours, 12 hours, 12 hours, 12 hours.
Oh, yeah, they're pumping that into her brains.
Exactly. And then all of a sudden you have this lovely young woman who's been walking around dead for who knows how long.
Yeah.
So it makes no sense, and they never reveal how that works.
Yeah. Now, like, if she can't get to the treatments because she's with them the whole time. Yeah. If we see that decomposition, we need to see her doing her makeup and doing the cover up or putting
on gloves. Or at least establish that there is like, a way to extend it. And that was never established.
Yeah. Yeah. And we don't have to know why she's doing it. Like, we just see a scene of her doing her makeup. Or her clothing is changed to cover more up.
Yeah. Yeah, because she's starting to break down. Yeah.
And we do it subtly. So if you're paying attention, the clothing's going to give that away.
Exactly.
But
we're
not going to go out of our way.
You could even have a throwaway line from Doug, because he's the only one who's not dead. It's like, what's that smell? Is that you, Roger?
Yeah.
So you set it up so that it can't tell which one it is, but.
They missed that joke.
They totally entirely. Missed that joke. It's like a gimme. Yeah, but I would like the fact. I know I would love the idea of her in her own self-preservation, maybe helping them find information about how to extend it, because she likes Roger, right? And you always get that sense that she likes Roger.
Yeah, I don't really need the happy ending.
No, but to service the story, they should at least know that he could be preserved for longer than 12 hours, and that could further fuel his motivation, right? By the time we get to the end of the movie, he's so deteriorated, I'm pretty sure he does not want to extend it anymore.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah. But I like the idea of him being offered the choice a little earlier, because it happens so late in the movie with Vincent Price. I can preserve you. Well, I mean, well, can you? It's kind of
maybe not
late.
Offered to him, but him knowing that it's a possibility.
Yeah.
Right. Just to further fuel his motivation. When we get to the end, that could be what McNabb offers him. He says, "I can take care of you. I can keep you alive for as long as you need me to." And then he goes, "Eh, fuck it." Mm-hmm. And that's where you have that climactic end where all the machinery gets broken and all that stuff. But I was expecting that offer, and it never happened.
Yeah, and we kind of have to figure out, like, who's alive, who's dead. I would love to them destroy all this stuff in the post-credit scene is we're suddenly seeing all sorts of rich people dropping like flies because they've been preserving themselves.
I would love that. Yeah, you see just headlines.
Yeah.
Millionaire heiress, dead, puddle of goo.
Yeah.
Right? Like, just like headlines like that, like, just like flashing across the screen over the credits kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right? Or under the credits, where they're just all sort of passing away. Donald J. Trump, pile of goo.
Yeah. Movie stars, the whole bit.
Yeah.
Like, and it changes the world, like, awfully quickly.
Yes.
Within 24 hours, there's chaos because nobody's getting their treatments. I mean, granted, there probably are more machines if it's reached out that far. So we may have to figure out the technology a little differently instead of having room in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I know.
Well, we know there's more than one because the butcher had one.
Yes. Well, that's the resurrection machine. But what is the keep you alive machine or keep you dead machine? Keep you from turning into a puddle of goo machine.
Yeah. And I'm guessing it's some sort of chemical base.
Yeah. Formaldehyde.
Well, right. Something a little more complex than that, so they can have proprietary.
Yeah, and formaldehyde keeps your body from deteriorating, but it doesn't keep you from necessarily like desiccating or whatever the case may be. I don't think so.
Yeah.
Eventually, like you see corpses, they dry up. They don't rot, but they dry up, right? So maybe there's this like an agent. It's not just formaldehyde, it's other things to keep them hydrated. And
I mean, what was that scene with Vincent Price? He's in with the machine, there's all these other people around. Was he like trying to sell this to rich people?
Yeah, why I thought that's where you got the idea from subscription base from.
Well, kind of. I mean, it kind of popped in my brain, but I kind of want it already out there.
Yeah. Like that idea that it is out there, but it's very underground.
Yeah, and at this point, they probably go on Discord or something to have their meeting.
Yeah, but
it wouldn't be in front of some dubious machine. Like, they just send out a video. Hey, look what we did.
You know, you could set that up so it's like where he says, well, this is not the type of meeting you can do over Zoom because you need to see it happen in real life.
True.
Right? No special effects, no trickery. You need to see this happen in real life.
Oh, so what if we do that we have that meeting set up and it's with Bigelow. They've killed Bigelow. They're using this person as their test subject for the next sales pitch.
Sounds good to me.
Kills two birds with one stone. We get rid of an investigator and it helps bait in Mortis.
I totally agree with that. Yeah, I think that the treatment doesn't require a machine, but it does require like an in studio treatment, right? Or it doesn't get shipped out.
Yeah.
Right? It's something they can do themselves, but they only get like a weekly dose or a monthly dose. So over the course of a week, you see.
And that could be something too. Like, we get a lead somewhere, somebody who comes into Los Angeles once every month
for their booster treatment.
For their boosters, yeah. To meet with this company. And that's a lead they can follow.
Or they come across somebody and they find a syringe that's broken, but they have enough there to test. And that's where we can get some more use out of Becky.
Yeah.
Right? Where she tests it and she's like, okay, so I think this stuff would help you, but there's not enough here for me to replicate it. Right? Yeah. Like, you know, the science thing that always happens in action horror movie or action comedy movies.
Yeah.
I know what this is, but I can't do anything with it because there's not enough of it.
Yeah. If you lick the microscope slide, you might get another 5 minutes.
Yeah. Exactly. But then that establishes that there's more to it.
Yeah.
Right? That it's not just.
Yeah. I'd like to use her a little bit more because it's apparent that she has knowledge. They're just not utilizing her in a way that moves the story forward.
Yeah, there's lots of characters like that where they're in there, but they didn't seem to know what to do with them. It's like, here's your love interest. She works in the morgue and she knows a lot of stuff, but we don't know what to do with her, so we're just going to kill her.
Yeah, I mean, instead of pointless banter in the car, you could go, hey, did you call that girl back?
Yeah.
Granted, my cast, that makes it, it's going to be awkward.
Well, I mean, you could, I mean, if you just change that dialogue in that scene. It's like they establish their dating and he just makes excuses. It's the work.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And she can just say at some point you're going to have to make the choice, me or the work, because that's a cop thing that happens to cops all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Simple dialogue, right? Establish that they are in a relationship, but it's rocky right now.
Mm-hmm.
Pure and simple. And then when he shows up dead, I mean, you have those moments where she's upset that at his death, because she never really seemed upset by his death.
No.
And then when he's resurrected, there'd be the joy, like all those that emotions that should come with that, we never really saw, right? Because they never established that they were in a relationship to begin with. They dated. They might have boned.
Now, we got to settle on a tone for this movie, too. I'm less concerned about the buddy cop scenario. Like, sure, yeah, that's there. But I'm less concerned of them hitting those tropes and leaning more into horror comedy.
Yes.
I mean, in kind of a little bit sillier comedy. I'm not sure if that's the place you want to go. Like, I'm thinking Sam Raimi, Evil Dead-ish type of...
Yeah, I was thinking the same kind of way. Like, my director kind of informed the way I want to go, because I really like Mayhem.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sorry, giving away a director. If you don't know who directed Mayhem, I'll tell you later.
He'd be good.
Yeah, so just the sheer mad pace of that, right? And that's kind of what I wanted to see from this. It should be just like rapid fire, like moving quickly from one scene to the next, but each scene change has to make sense. So yeah, that's sort of more the action horror comedy and less buddy comedy.
Yeah.
Right? And there really wasn't that much of it, to be honest with you, right? I mean, that's the thing, is they advertise it as a buddy comedy, but...
Outside of like the half-assed banter, and there's a lot of it.
Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't come through because poor Piscopo got a half of a script.
Got half of a script, yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think you still sort of have the sort of acerbic kind of grates on your nerve character.
Yeah.
Because that way when he dies, you don't care so much. And then you have your sort of good guy committed to the job cop. I mean, maybe not acerbic, but you have the guy who's sort of like, he's riding on Roger's coattails to an extent, but he's there when he's needed.
Well, I mean, in that scenario anyway, it probably won't work in my cast, but you've got the more intellectual cop and you've got the muscle.
Yeah.
You know, it's clear what they were going for.
Yes. Oh, very clear what they're going for. Like the way they were presented and the way they're built, and if Joe had actually had some dialogue, maybe we could have done a little bit of a better job with that.
Yeah.
But yes, I think that, more horror comedy than buddy action comedy. Jay promised that we would be leading into October with a little horror-ish, and now we're going to make it horror.
Well, horror comedy.
Yeah.
We're
horror comedy, still horror.
Yeah. We're in a mood. Yeah. We're in a mood. But this one, like, as it stands, this movie is all of those things and none of those things.
Yes.
Like,
and the funny thing is, it is more horror than anything else, if you really think about it.
To me, watching it, it's like watching Ghostbusters. The horror community never embraces it. And the people who love Ghostbusters don't consider it a horror movie, despite it having all the horror tropes. Horror aspects.
Horror aspects, yeah.
Ghosts and some pretty grisly-looking ghosts at that.
And this one has that same – you're right. It kind of has that same vibe. But, I mean, it's – in the end, like I said at the very beginning, this is not a happy movie.
No.
It's really dark when you look past all the gloss and the jokes.
At no point are they trying to pull the audience into that darkness, though.
No.
They
want you to have fun, but there's a line you can walk on that.
I think you can still be funny and still be emotional.
Yes.
Yeah. That's where the fine line of a smart comedy.
Yeah.
It's fine. Manipulate your audience so when you tell that joke, there's a bit of relief.
Yeah. And you're a little uncomfortable for laughing, but you're still relieved, yes.
Yeah.
It's like, why am I laughing here?
Because it is. It's an action horror comedy.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with all those things. Now, Trish did leave a cast. It's very Trish.
It's very Trish.
It's very Trish. You could tell what she's been watching. Let's start with Roger Mortis. She went with Kyle Gallner, and he was in Smile, Scream, and The Cleansing Hour.
He was also in Veronica Mars. I can't dispute that choice. I kind of support that choice.
Dougie is Fortune Feimster. I don't know. Look him up. Sam and I are both looking at each other. Mm-hmm. Hugh Laurie is Loudermilk, and apparently she wants to make sure he dies of lupus.
It wasn't lupus, doesn't it say? It's never lupus.
It's never lupus. That's why it should be lupus. Yeah. That's why he has to use the resurrection, because he's dying of lupus. Or died of lupus. It's never lupus, so the irony is not lost on me.
Yeah.
Rebecca, she wants Hari Neff, and she played the doctor in the Barbie movie. Not her only Barbie cast, because we're moving right into the next one. Randy as Issa Rae, who played President Barbie. In the Barbie movie. Yeah. And the body doc, as she calls it, she wants Ken Jeong.
He's a doctor. Okay.
Sure.
I don't like him, but...
Yeah, not crazy about him either. And Mr. Thule Benedict Wong. And for her director, she wants Mike Mendez, who directed the horror comedy segments of Friday the 31st on Tales of Halloween. Wow. Dug deep on that one.
She did, yes. I haven't seen it, so I can't say for sure if he's a good fit or not. So, but.
She took a segment from an anthology movie.
Yeah, but... I mean, there were a few actors in there that I recognized this time.
Yeah, some of those are pretty good. She also goes on to say, Treat Williams had glorious hair, and I miss the days when stars had a little thatch of chest hair. He also stars in my favorite Tales from the Crypt episode, None But the Lonely Heart, which probably had the same writer.
Probably, quite possibly, yeah.
I did look that one up, but it is funny that the writer wrote quite a few Tales from the Crypt episodes. She's got other notes here. We'll see if we bring it up.
We'll see if we bring it up.
Maybe. Sam, why don't you...
lead in with mine?
Since Trish went first.
Huh? Trish kind of went first, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, you
had to do it so you didn't forget.
Speaking from the dead.
Yeah. From beyond.
From beyond.
Okay. So I try to cast like we actually might have a budget for it. So as usual. So for my Roger Mortis, I went with Freddy Rodriguez from Planet Terror and Ugly Betty. I think that he has that right... sort of demeanor, or he can have that right kind of demeanor for the Roger character. Did I call him rigor mortis? I think I did. I think I fell for it.
Well, yeah, that's why he's called Roger Mortis.
Yeah, I know. I know. For my Doug Bigelow, I went with Kevin Hart.
Okay. Yeah, I want to hang him upside down in a fish tank.
I know you're not a big fan. But again, if you want that dynamic, though, and he's very good at that dynamic.
Sure.
Typically with The Rock, but he can do it with other people.
Yeah, he's capable of acting with other people.
Yeah, I'd like to see him do it.
Other people can get him jobs too.
Yeah. For my Randy, I went with Danita Melchior. She played Ratcatcher 2 in the Suicide Squad.
She's wonderful.
She was wonderful, and I want to see her in more. Mm-hmm. Therefore, in here.
There's someone I saw her in fairly recently. She was really good.
She's a really good actress.
It's probably someone on Netflix. I can't remember what it was.
For my Dr. McNabb or Bone Doc or Body Doc, sorry, I went Matthew Broderick.
Oh, interesting choice.
When he does skeevy, he does it really well. He played the skeevy principal in a zombie horror TV series on Netflix, and it was great, and he was fantastic.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'd like to see him do kind of like that, walking that line of friendly and skeevy at the same time.
Nice.
For my Loudermilk, I went with Billy Bob Thornton.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, because you can't replace Vincent Price, so...
Yeah, you can, but I have an angle.
Okay, but yeah, I wanted somebody who has their own presence and their own voice, and Billy Bob Thornton has a great voice.
Sure, yeah.
For my Rebecca Smithers, I went with Natasha Liu Bordizzo. She is currently in Ahsoka as the character's name I can't remember, Ahsoka's apprentice, the Asian girl with the purple hair.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I went with her.
Are you liking the show?
Yes, very much.
Okay. I'm glad that's one of us.
Yeah.
Actually, I like this week's episode 4 for our listeners. That was pretty good. But episode 3, they just stole scenes from A New Hope because apparently they found a few they didn't use yet in Force Awakens. I'm really frustrated with the show as a whole because it so far feels like another movie script that got padded out.
Well, we'll see how it goes. I like the characters, and I like episode 4. Yeah, episode 3, I'll give you that one. I have one more cast member and a director. Mm-hmm. For my Mr. Thule, or Tool, however you say his name, I went Tony Shalhoub. It doesn't have to be an Asian guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? As a matter of fact, you could get rid of that Asian trope entirely, especially if we're getting rid of the scene with the...
Thule doesn't exactly say Asian.
Exactly.
It just could be anybody.
Could be anybody. And Tony Shalhoub can eat up scenery like nobody's business.
Yeah, I like that. I haven't seen him in a while.
Exactly. And then for my director, as I mentioned, I went with the director of Mayhem, Joe Lynch.
Yeah, Joe Lynch. Love Joe Lynch. He's great. That's a good choice. And I just realized I didn't write down my director. And I have one in mind, but the movie that I'm pulling from isn't quite coalescing in my brain.
It's okay. You can pause and look it up on your phone.
I could. All right. I did what Sam suggested, so now I have a director.
Yay, me. Yay, Jay.
Could you sense the pause? No, because I edited it out. All right. For my cast, I went with a gender swap for my primary cast. So I've got female leads, which I guess puts the whole love interest thing all wonky, but fuck it, whatever.
Not necessarily.
Doesn't have to be a straight relationship.
Nope.
For Mortis, I just went with last names now because Roger doesn't quite work.
No.
Anna Marie Thomas. You might not know her. She was pretty much an unknown until she did Evil Dead Rise. She's the mom in that. And I specifically went for that because she can do very likable character and do good drama, do comedy, but she could also be really fucking freaky under makeup. And I kind of liked that dichotomy. I'm like, oh, I want to pull that into something a little more fun with this movie. And then I made her partner somebody more overconfident, a little larger in presence, a mouthier. So Melissa McCarthy for Bigelow.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know what their chemistry is going to be like, but I'd love to try it. For McNabb, just popping into scenes until we find out, oh, he's part of all this too, J.K. Simmons.
Oddly enough, he was one of the ones I looked at, but I'm decided not to.
For A.P. Loudermilk, I wanted another horror icon. So I went with Robert Englund.
Okay, I will give you that one. Still not replacing Vincent Price, no. But certainly an acceptable substitute.
And I wanted to keep the nod to horror legends there. And I certainly love your choice, too. But that was kind of what I was going for. I'm like, well, it's one horror legend to another, right? For Randy, I went with Allison Williams, since we've beefed up her role. You might remember her from Get Out, The Perfection, and Megan. Three incredible horror movies. And for Rebecca, the coroner, I went with Stephanie Beatriz.
Okay.
From Twisted Metal and Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which would have made Trish very happy, because I also pulled in Samoa Joe for The Butcher.
Nice.
Because I wanted another wrestler if we kept it. We're not keeping it, but if I had, Samoa Joe.
He still has a place in here somewhere.
Sure, we'll figure it out. And for Mr. Thule, I was kind of like you. I'm like, do I keep him Asian? Don't I keep him Asian? In the end, I did go with it. I used James Sato, who played Shredder in the live-action Turtles movie from way back in our childhood.
Oh, that one. Okay. Yeah.
A little older now, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. I like that.
Yeah. No, that works for me.
Yeah, and that's my cast. And for the director I went digging for, I went with Australian filmmaker Alistair Grierson, who directed a movie I talked about on 31 Days of Horror a couple years ago, and Trish did last year, called Bloody Hell. He does horror comedy really well. And I kind of wanted to bring him into mainstream Hollywood.
Always love it when that happens.
Yeah.
When they get a chance.
Yeah, that movie's fabulous. If you haven't seen it, go check it out on Shudder if it's still there.
Yes.
It's highly curated, so things move on that.
Speaking of Australian directors who should be more popular in Hollywood or should be working in Hollywood, whatever happened to Sean Burke? He did two or three great films and then just disappeared.
Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully we got something coming into him. I mean, who knows with Hollywood, a lot of things got derailed because of the pandemic and things are just getting moving again, and then the strikes happened.
Well, wait and see, I guess, but I hope he has more, because he does another really one of those Australian directors I'd love to see more from.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. IMDb gives this a 6.1 out of 10.
That's pretty decent.
Yeah. And Trish isn't here, but after today, I'm going to be retiring Rotten Tomatoes scores. I've said Rotten Tomatoes scores are bullshit for years, but it is kind of fun to do the guessing game. Turns out they really are bullshit.
Yes.
The controversy, I don't know if the audience has heard about this yet, but basically people have been paying for their reviews over on Rotten Tomatoes, allegedly.
Allegedly.
And I don't feel like I want to name drop them any more than I have to. I mean, they just proved us right. I don't think we ever made that accusation, but we clearly knew something was up.
Because just something didn't know. Things rarely meshed up there.
Yeah. Yeah. So the last hurrah on Rotten Tomatoes is this week with Dead Heat. Rest in peace, you Rotten Tomato. You've got your splat from me.
Yes.
But let's do this one for one last ride. What do you think the critics thought of this on Rotten Tomatoes?
I think critics thought it was a fun ride, but like us, didn't think it was a very good movie. So I'm going to go with 53%.
And before you stick with that, original critics savaged this thing. So
okay, so let's drop that down to 37% then.
Okay. And what do you think the audiences thought?
Again, I like to use IMDb as a rule of thumb, so I'm going to say about 58%.
Okay. Rotten Tomatoes gives this movie, the critics gave this movie 11%.
Oh, it didn't deserve that.
No, this does feel like it's based on the original critiques. And yeah. I get it. It is.
It's all over the place and messy.
The plot is unintelligible, but it's still kind of fun, all things considered. It's a good, bad movie.
Yeah.
Or a bad, good movie? I don't know. There's somewhere in here that it's actually pretty entertaining. Audiences gave it a 49%. Ooh,
I was far kinder than.
Yes. So, there you go. That was the last hurrah for Rotten Tomatoes.
Trish is going to be so relieved.
She will. She will.
I'm going to start doing
Metacritic. I might have to, I'll have to come up with something else. Yeah, we'll have to go with the metric.
Yeah.
Oh, what's going to happen now? But, yeah. Fuck Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, you've got to give Trish that anxiety at the end of the episode every week.
Yeah, I got to do something. Write in if you have some secret anxiety moments to throw onto Trish. Let me know. Send it to my social media or email us at Invasion Remake on Twitter X, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Threads, or invasionoftheremake@gmail.com if you want to email us your suggestions on how to torture Trish or suggestions on an episode or comparison, or including fan challenges that we will kind of bank for future episodes as well. And we will certainly shout you out if we use your idea.
And we like ideas.
And we do like ideas. And I don't know if we've fully fleshed this one out or not, but I like the idea of the big business, and I can kind of envision what this is going to be. It's not going to be this movie.
No.
It would watch very differently with that leaning towards more action comedy, horror, less of the buddy cop stuff, but and pulling in some of the DOA DNA.
Yeah.
Right. Which is where this is all based, but that was very noirish instead of Lethal Weapon.
Well, and I was going to say, I mean, even pulling some of that 7 DNA funnier because it's a dark, dark film where the investigation into this very strange mystery is part of the horror.
Yeah.
As they discover more horrific things, it becomes less funny.
Yeah, yeah. I think you don't want to be sad that they're walking into the light, which I actually kind of liked.
I did kind of like that too. And like I said, it's not a happy movie, but it does have a satisfying ending.
And I like the fact that they didn't leave us upset that the characters were going to die.
No, I wasn't bothered at all by it because it was the one thing in the movie that didn't feel tropey.
I think it's because the characters accepted it too and they were constantly joking about it. Like, they even set you up. What if you knew your death date?
Yeah. No, it's
it really prepares you. Like, okay, well, we know where this is going to end.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed that. I mean, right at the beginning of the movie, you know that they establish that he's not going to get a miracle cure, right? But that's why I love the idea of him finding out about it and everybody thinking maybe he is. Right? Him and Doug making the decision or Mortis and Doug making the decision is like, well, no, it's not worth it. Right? Justice is more important than us
Yeah. I mean,
preserving our death.
Yeah. I mean, if they could solve the crime and get the cure in time, but
it's way too late for Roger anyhow. Yeah. Right? And Joe's not letting him go alone.
Yeah. And that's where the buddy cop stuff comes in too. That pure DNA of lethal weapon.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, I don't want it anywhere near as dark as Seven, like I was suggesting.
No,
but that investigation process in Seven is what it's there. Yeah.
We need those threads to pull the characters from one place to another, either an action sequence or a dramatic sequence of discovery that leads them to the next thing.
Yeah. Or some horror, right? I mean, this is a horror comedy and we need that horror. Then make those horror moments horror-y. And that's where, like I said, you could have somebody like Joe Lynch or your director who can really bring those explosive moments out, right?
Yeah. I mean, bloody hell is wonderful because, I mean, they've managed to keep this movie very funny despite the fact that the family is eating him.
Yeah,
and it's that balance where it's just like you're disgusted by what you watch, but at the same time it's like, wow, you're really rooting for them and you know it's gonna end badly.
Yeah. And you're a little bit bothered by the fact you're laughing but you can't help yourself.
Yeah.
And that's what a good horror comedy should do, is it should make you laugh and then make you wonder why you're laughing.
Yeah. And that's kind of, I think, what we're shooting for here.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, if you like Dead Heat, what's wrong with you? Actually, you're my kind of freak.
Yes.
If you like Dead Heat, tell people about the show, get them to listen to this episode and our past 400 some odd episodes. And you can show them the archives on our website.
invasiontheremake.wixsite.com/podcast.
Yeah, there's even links to podcatchers there that you can click on. And there's also a button to our store, which will take you to our TeePublic store, where you can buy t-shirts, mugs, posters, PPE masks, totes, notebooks, magnets, stickers, all sorts of stuff with well over 70 designs in our store to choose from and more all the time, including our special 31 Days of Horror designs. We're really close now. We're only a couple of weeks away to October, where we're going to be doing horror movies. We're also going to be watching 31 horror movies each that we've never seen before, and then we will come back to you in November with the results of that. And if you're following along and doing your own horror challenge, your own 31 Days of Horror challenge, send us your lists when you're done.
Yeah,
do it quickly because we're going to jump right into them. So make a list and just kind of collate it. You can email it to us or you can keep track on
Letterbox
and then just send us a link to that or record your own voice and tell us your thoughts. You can always send us that as well and maybe we can insert that into an episode. So there's a few different ways you can submit your 31 Days of Horror challenge. There's lots of horror fans out there. We know you're listening and we know you love it when we do the horror episodes, and we can't wait to get into it.
No, we can't.
Now, I dropped a hint earlier in the episode of what we're doing next week, so I'm not dropping any more hints for you.
Nor should you. It was a pretty big hint.
It was right there. I had actually forgotten what it was going to be next week. And then I'm like, oh, I'm tied back. I can't remember. And then it jumped in my brain and pointing at Sam.
Yeah, you just seen his face. It was funny.
The things that we do on audio that you guys can't see.
Your loss.
So we got one more episode before we get into the horror stuff. Good. We got a good comparison for you next week, and then we're going to jump right into the horror movies.
Like more horror-y than this.
Yes, yes. It should be a good mix. We always have a good mix of stuff. I've been watching horror movies pretty much all year long, so yeah, it's going to be, what is this?
That's what it is for me every year, Jay.
I always have a few things planned, and there's a whole lot less of them this go around, but there's a few things I'm hoping will be out and available by the time we start doing this. So
yeah, no, there's a few sort of tent poles that came out this year that I will be doing during 31 Days of Horror. Mm-hmm.
But the great thing is I'll probably be able to talk about all of them.
Yeah. Probably, yeah. And that's why I wait to do them for 31 Days, because I know you've probably seen them and we can still talk about them.
I'm going to leave it for everybody else to watch for 31 Days of Horror this year, and I can just have the conversations and I'm going to dive into some really weird shit.
Well, that's usually my
mostly.
Job.
Yeah. It should be really unique then this year.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I love my weird shit.
Well, hopefully Trish will be back with us next week. We'll see how the schedule works for her, and hopefully we can get her back in here next week. Until then, I'm Jason.
I'm always Sam.
And we are out of here.
Do it. I can't live a lifetime in 6 hours.
Nobody's got all the time they need, Roger. Nobody. You remember we were in training? They always told us you can't be a good cop if you're a dead cop. Here's your chance to prove them wrong. You're good, and you're dead.
I'm good, and I'm dead.
Come on, Raj. Let's go find those suckers and trash their ass, man. Come on, Raj.
It's asses. It's plural.
It's plural?